I have to explain a little bit. I'm still unclear exactly what the solitary realizer is imagining when it says grasping at the external form and the apprehension of that external form as being empty of any substance. Can you be a little bit more, explain a little more exactly what that abandonment is on that?
The Rangegi Pangcha Shalva, Suzi, Suda, Zimba Zeshingi Tawa.
Pangcha Shalva.
방자들은 the case of the you know, the soul realize they accept external existence and so, you know, you have the external form, and then you have the perception, the apprehension of that form, and then the zeshin with the zeshin is because they accept external existence, so they you know they. You know what they're trying to realize is the emptiness of the form and the perception of that form as being of other substance, different substance. This is again, you know, when we have different philosophical schools in Buddhism, and some accept external existence, some do not accept external existence. So, when presenting the grounds and paths, sometimes you fall into the categories of different schools that propound different views.
But
the true so for those who do not accept external existence, the grounds on which they do not accept external existence is that what they say is that the visual form that I see. Right, you have this visual form solely due to the my karmic imprints, you know, and they accept a consciousness which is regarded as a mind which is the basis of all. So, it is this imprint which has empowered the visual form of this katsi, that has empowered, and that there is they do not accept this form has come about due to the accumulation of powerless particles coming together making of this what they attribute the external existence what they attribute it to be as arising solely from the basis of the reckoning of the imprints within our psychic or within our consciousness.
So that it's almost like the imputation because of karma over lifetimes, the label that is in the mind automatically identifies
If according to this school's viewpoint, is that they do not accept external existence. They do not say these forms came together due to the collection process of the collection of these particles. What they say is solely due to, according to this philosophical school, is a, you know, the ripening of the imprints that are there in this consciousness known as the mind, which is the basis of all, which has brought on this existence of this particular visual form. And they apply this concept to all sensory objects, five sense objects.
So they don't see them as dependent arisings.
The kunsu chiru chiding che mane na tanda de kunsu nam che pa che min be ti sunye zu zu ten de che ling ro sa de accept dependent arising
ko chiru wi pa gi mon zu ani kha sa se wa la de se chi pa gi ani kha sa chiru ko mo ko ti zu yang bi jian de ne chung wa la pa zai min ko ji wa la wa.
Because you see how they understand, how they apply the dependent arising is, you know, the ripening of the imprints is what caused the, they say there is an imprint which is connected to the external existence. So they say the visual form and the consciousness seeing that form of one substance, and so the here is you know the what they realize what they're trying to realize is the emptiness of being of different substance, you know, these two being of different substance. It's a philosophical viewpoint.
Well, the basis of all is confusing me
when you say that. Kunshin Nam says his Again, in amongst the different philosophical schools, those that accept a consciousness which is a mind which is a basis of all, you know, there are schools that accept it and don't accept it. In the ultimate viewpoint, then it's not accepted. They don't accept a mind which is the basis of everything we see or hear or like that. There isn't such that. But then you also have philosophical viewpoints that do accept that kind of view of a, you know, a mind which is the basis of all. But the Buddha did teach on the concept of such a mind which is the basis of all. Because for certain individuals, you know, if you don't propound a view like that, it's very difficult for them to accept the workings of cause and effect and all that. And so, to suit certain viewpoints, the Buddha did teach on the theory of a consciousness or mind, which is the basis of all, and in acceptance of this view, on the basis of this view, they are able to accept other karma and other things. When we talk about Buddha being so extremely skilled in the methods of guiding disciples on the path to liberation, in the skill of their omniscience is to be able to teach exactly what suits the mental disposition or the interests of the individual. It's just like a doctor, you know, in treating a patient, he is not at the liberty of giving whatever treatment he wants to that patient, because it's you treat the patient according to the illness. you don't make a choice of treatment because that's the most expensive or the most highly recommended. No, it's not up to the doctor to decide on the kind of treatment. You have to create the medication or treatment according to the ailment of the patient. So, you see, you know, for that doctor to treat that particular patient, you know, he has to decide on the kind of the dosage and, you know, the way in which, you know, whatever will perfectly treat that ailment, the doctor decides that way. It doesn't mean just because he has the most powerful antidote that he's got to use that one. Because even though that is available, it's not appropriate for that. So accordingly, you know, there were disciples, you know, for whom the Buddha taught the highest of the philosophy in accordance with his ultimate way of thinking. And then he taught those at a level below that and those at a... Yet, from the most basic, all of these different levels are eventually, you know, geared towards realizing the highest viewpoint.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Perhaps since it is possible at the path of accumulation to degenerate on the small path of accumulation, to degenerate one bodhicitta, is it possible to only be on that path on that level for a very short amount of time, like a day?
That solemn chumugi negab so that changes some nyamba. You think all ya from school neya de to you to do neya chia kareche kareya desu ba ta di from school ta chenju se ne nyamba yor wa nyamya ti te manya ya chia
ta ti ma ti ma wa ka ta ta mi de wa mi ti ko ma de wa ni na ka ta ti ka chi la from bi ne la la ani chanju se ba gi chanju bi se
常常的生命里面你天天给他们学呢 The disquans is the Maya chit, the Nego Ya, Tom Dingle Gratchet Hachoeso. So, it's different for different individuals. Sometimes, for certain individuals, when they hear about the Bodhisattva's path, like that, you know, it's too overwhelming. The practices such as, you know, in benefiting sentiments are countless, numberless. In practicing the type of generosity, you know, giving one's body, like, you know, sometimes they are so overwhelmed by the practice, they feel like totally discouraged, you know, from that path and choose to train in the individual path, you know, because they don't have what is known as the armor-like. The armor-like tolerance or armor-like patience, you know, when you have the armor-like patience tolerance, no matter how much one has to work for the benefit of suffering, one's forbearance tolerance is so great that it does not set you back in any way. So, so sometimes individuals are discouraged by when they realize the overwhelming nature of this practice that it involves, and so So to guarantee that one will not degenerate from this is to constantly to understand, to remind oneself or to be mindful or aware of the benefits of bodhicitta. you know, and the shortcomings or the limitations of just seeking one's own individual liberation. It's the only way to not to be, you know, to safeguard one from the degeneration from that aspiration of bodhicitta.
And has one entered the path of the lower level of the path of accumulation when one has generated uncontrived bodhicitta, or just that conceptual contrived bodhicitta?
Cholam chungvi negu su chanchu sen keba di chema re uncontrived bodhicitta. One never can become a bodhisattva on a contrived bodhicitta. You know, when one enters the Mayana path, you know, which the bodhicitta, which is the entry into the Mayana path, is uncontrived bodhicitta. This is the story of the one great Indian Buddhist Buddhist master by the name of Dignana, and then he was composing one text. In Tibetan it's called Chamakunti, but I don't know the Sanskrit name. But in that particular text, what the subject material is, utilizing the many reasonings that establishes the Buddha as a perfect and a valid individual. And, you know, so... And so what he used to do was like, he used to write on the wall like all the verses, which is like a praise, but as well as reasonings establishing the Buddha as a perfect individual like that. So he'd write all this, and then he'd go off for the day for begging for alms. But then there was another non-Buddhist who was sitting. He would come and he'd rub everything out. So that happened a few times. Then one time, what this Indian master, Buddhist master, did was, he said, "Don't rub it out, but if you want to debate, let's meet here," like that. So the two of them had a debate, and then debate about Dignana is saying all the reasonings establishing why the Buddha is a perfect valid individual. So in the course of that debate, the other non-Buddhist, he lost the debate or the argument, and so, but he reacted by, he had a lot of psychic powers, the non-Buddhist, so he through psychic feats he created this fire from his mouth and wanted to burn Dignana, but And then, you know, he did this, and Dignana was like so disappointed, thinking like, you know, I cannot even benefit one individual. Mm-hmm. You know, and then he, like, it was at that point when he was on the verge of giving up on bodhicitta, you know, he's feeling so like hopeless in his, benefiting in it, like he failed even to convince this one individual after all that reasoning, you know. So he was so disappointed that, the slabs of stones that he was riding on, he was going to like, he said, forget it, I'm not going to persevere in writing this text. And so he wanted to throw away that slab of stone. And when he did that, then at the same time, he had the direct visionary experience of seeing Manjushri directly, like face to face, and then Manjushri kind of calmed him down. That's my interpretation. Anyway, Manjushri said, you don't need to be disappointed like that. In future, this writing will be of great value and meaning for disciples of the future. So you should continue on like that.
It's
this text called Pramana Vartika, you know, this text. And that's the commentary to the origin, this text that he was writing. Pramana Vartika is the commentary. Commentary to this to this text that Dignana was writing. So that root text is now is very, very highly regarded. Not only the story under which it arose and how it was Manjushri himself, who affirmed the validity and the authority of this text and the kind of the benefits that would that it would render for the individuals of the future. Now in the monasteries, when they study the philosophies, these texts, the commentary and the text that Dignana wrote. I don't know the anyway, it's called Samakunta in Tibetan. So these are some of the most basic texts that they found their studies on.